Hi, welcome to the Parenting Reframe podcast. I am Albiona Rakipi, your host. I'm a former teacher, a parent, currently a pediatric speech and language pathologist, and I'm a writer. I've worked with thousands of children and families throughout the last 20 years, and I have learned so much. On this podcast, we'll approach parenting from a curious place. We'll ask questions and get answers, explore new ideas, unpack the unconscious beliefs and expectations we hold on to about parenting, and reframe what it means to parent. We'll search for solutions to some of our biggest parenting challenges, set aside judgments, and find our way through this wild journey. My hope is that this podcast is a space where parents can feel seen, heard, and supported. Welcome aboard, and let's reframe together. On this week's episode of the Parenting Reframe podcast, I'm so excited to talk with Dr. Cindy Hovington. I have been a fan of Dr. Cindy Hovington, and if you're familiar with The Curious Neuron or follow them on Instagram, you're probably a fan just like me. Dr. Hovington is a mom of three, a neuroscientist, and she is the brains behind Curious Neuron. She is fantastic, and she was just as lovely to talk to as I thought she would be. In this episode, we talk a lot about parental well-being. This is one of the areas that Dr. Hovington is so passionate about. She really wants to take care of you, the parent, because her and I both agree that when you can find that steady place, when you can learn how to manage your emotions, the rest becomes so much easier and we can teach our kids how to cope and move through the rest. We will talk about tantrums. We will talk about how to set boundaries without losing your cool. We give a lot of alternative ideas of what to do when you're in public. This is the podcast episode for you if you're always needing strategies to keep yourself calm while also meeting your child's emotional and developmental needs. I can't recommend Dr. Cindy Hovington enough. She, along with The Curious Neuron, is the host of the Reflective Parent Teen podcast, and she has the Reflective Parent Club, which is designed to keep the mental well-being of parents at the forefront so that you can have strategies and tools and feel equipped to basically handle whatever challenge parenting throws your way. Without further ado, here is my friend, Dr. Cindy Hovington. Hi, Cindy. Welcome to the podcast. I was just talking with you before we started recording, and I was saying I'm such a fan. I was wanting to mention that I actually heard you for the very first time on Kelly Levesque's podcast on Be Well by Kelly, which is like, I don't know how long ago that was.
A few years ago now.
Yeah, no, it's been right, because I've been really like in the weeds of like reading all your things, and you have The Curious Neuron is what it was at the time, was that podcast, and you're a neuroscientist and all these wonderful things that I'm like, oh, she has an incredible way of seeing things when it comes to parenting and kids. And so I went down the rabbit hole of looking at your things at that time and just became a big fan ever since. So this is such an honor for me to have you on the podcast and to be able to ask you all the questions that I've been wanting to ask you. So thank you so much for being here.
Oh, that means so much to me. Thank you. I've been doing this for a few years now, and I've been trying to put the message out in terms of the science of parenting for like 7 or 8 years. And so it really means a lot when there's somebody who's been there for a long time and has seen also, which I'm sure you've seen, like the evolution of Curious Neuron. And there's been quite a few pivots, but always in the same direction. So towards a certain goal that we've had. So I'm excited to talk about all that with you.
Yeah, amazing. I think why your work resonates with me, and I pass it along to so many of the families that I work with, is because I think there is this sort of approach that you have that, one, a lot of what you're sharing is really rooted in science, and you really understand and know sort of not just children's needs, but also the parents' needs, right? Because both of those things have to be looked at. Mm. So with that, I love that you have the Reflective Parenting Club. It's such an important piece, and it's something that I've been weaving into my work a little bit more as well, like a focus on the parent and not the child. Yeah. It's really funny. I began as a writer. I did not start with the intent of ever having a podcast.
Same.
Ever coaching families. I had no social media until I turned 38, I think. Like, I never knew what it was. I mean, I knew what it was, but I wasn't
right
active on there. And I just wrote. And I started to write because so many parents were coming to me and saying, please help me get my child to stop doing that, you know, and whatever that is, you know, you sort of fill in the blank. And I kept thinking, it's interesting how we remove ourselves, us the parent, from the equation and just want the answers to fix the problem that lies within the child, was at least the perception.
Yeah.
And so I love that that spotlight is starting to shift now a little bit to this more interconnected dynamic that we see and we know certainly has a role in how kids respond and how parents manage stress. So can you talk a little bit about sort of why the Reflective Parenting Club, or how it came to be and what you were seeing in your practice and in your line of work?
Right. Well, first of all, what you said is so important, right? Because I see this also with parents where it's like, okay, hi, I'd love to change this behavior in my child, or I'd like to change things because it's hard in our home and we don't know how to fix this. And so part of it is what you just said. I know that it's hard sometimes as a parent. I'm a mom of three kids. I know that it can be really difficult to hear that, like, you need to start with yourself first, because you say, I already have enough on my plate. I can't do anything else. And now you're telling me what, I have to journal or something? Like, what do I have to do? And so I appreciate that and understand that and empathize towards that. However, I do think that as parents, we have to think of the environment. That's the word we have to use for our child. It's not just changing something in them. So you can see the top therapist, the top doctor, whatever it is, right, for your child. Maybe they're going to see your child once every week for an hour. It's still not enough. If the environment at home doesn't change, or the environment at school, and both, or whatever it is, something that is contributing to this behavior, that is contributing to what I do, which is emotion regulation skills and learning how to cope with stress and emotions, something is influencing that. And so we have to become these sort of scientists or detectives, if we want, that we collect data and we start to say, like, okay, I've noticed that when my child is with me versus my partner, behavior is different. Why? And not just why, but what is happening? What am I doing that's different? How am I responding to my child that's different? So these are all the things that I've wanted to share with parents for a long time. So Curious Neuron has been around for many years now. The goal of Curious Neuron was to share the science of parenting and emotional intelligence or emotion regulation skills with parents. But before the pandemic, it was 80% focused on the child, 20% focused on the parent. And then the pandemic happened, and I saw a shift in the emails I was receiving and the questions. And at that point, that was my biggest sort of growth for Curious Neuron. And the emails were just about, my child's out of control, this is out of control, when I knew parents were also not out of control, but experiencing the greatest stress they had ever experienced. And so I realized, if I don't shift my language and if I don't shift the message I'm trying to put out, then we're going to miss something, and the next generation is going to be missing some tools, notably emotion regulation skills. So I switched Curious Neuron to becoming 80% focused on the parent, 20% focused on the child. And that has been our biggest impact now in terms of still supporting the child. That is still my goal. But we as a society have to find ways to shift our focus towards the parent if we truly want to support the child. And so that is why we launched the Reflective Parent Club. Last summer, I spoke with 100 parents. So I'm part of I have a startup now. The Curious Neuron is no longer just a fun thing that I do on weekends. It's truly a company. We're a small team. And what we're trying to do is translate science for parents, focused around effective parenting practices, but more importantly, what contributes to a parent's well-being, right? Like stress in a relationship, stress at work, stress because a child is acting out or going through a period of their life like tantrums where it's just overwhelming for a parent. How do we give parents the tools that they need to be able to cope with that kind of stress, to be able to manage and cope their emotions? All things that we did not learn growing up. You know, Curious Neuron is still mostly education-based, which is all free through the podcast that's now called the Reflective Parenting Podcast, and our website, curiousneuron.com, social media, all of that is free. But now we realized, you know what? A course or learning, education is not enough when it comes to knowing how to effectively manage emotions and stress. It's as if I were to tell you, let's join a tennis tournament and we're going to play the top players. We're not going to practice. We're just going to show up and hope for the best. I think that's the approach we take sometimes as parents, right? It's like, well, I'm annoyed at these tantrums, or I'm annoyed at this behavior my seven-year-old is displaying. It's frustrating, it's overwhelming, but I'm going to show up in the same way tomorrow without having found skills, not reading about what to say, but figuring out what that child needs and figuring out what I need. And so that's the birth of the Reflective Parent Club. I realized that we needed a program, a science-based program that I developed with our team that covers all four domains of emotional intelligence, self and social awareness, and awareness of my child in front of me, and relationship management, because that relationship in front of the child has an impact as well. But that parents needed more than just education, they needed practice. And so I meet with parents every single week for an hour, and they can say, hey, I've noticed this in my life. What does it mean? Or I really struggled this week. I lost it on my child and now I feel guilty. So I can walk them through, here's what you do next, right? Like, here's the repair and here's what you can start to notice with your child. So I really hope that the parents that we see mostly feel that they are not competent. We have a competence scale that they take at the beginning of the program. And 40% of our parents feel that they don't have the competence for parental competence, right? So the skills. And I think that's an important point because sure, you know, parents will tell me when I go to work, I've been doing this for 20 years. And so I feel competent. I don't feel like I need to practice these skills. But when I come home, I don't feel the same. And so every situation is overwhelming. So we build the skills that they need. And I meet with them every week so that I can help them notice certain things and tell them, here's the data you need to collect. I can't give you an answer. You are going to figure it out by doing small little tests, you know, like testing something out. Does it work better when I say this to my child versus that? Does it work better when I do this to regulate myself versus another activity? And then you will get to the answers on your own. But that's what I'm hoping we can offer through everything that I do with Curious Neuron. A little long as an answer, but that's in a nutshell.
No, it's perfect. Oh my gosh, I was hanging on to every word because it's so true and it is a need, right? It's really a need right now. And I'm sure you see it. I know I definitely see it. And you know, you're right. It was kind of through the pandemic that we started to see this shift in terms of, you know, the overwhelm was so much. And instead of it being, you know, my child, can you get them to stop hitting? Like, what do I need to do? It just became like, like everything feels out of control. I don't even know, you know, like it just felt like people couldn't even find their footing anymore. And it was understandable for a lot of fair and, you know, valid reasons. So I think it's important. And I love that your work is really rooted in science and it's really there to help parents to give them the confidence and the tools to be able to say, okay, like that didn't really work, but I'm going to try doing it this way. Or I'm actually going to look at how I'm responding. It's funny because when you were talking, I was thinking about when I work with families, I do 12-week interim. So we work together 12 weeks at a time. And I stopped doing one-time calls because of what you're saying. Like, you just have to like really adopt this idea that you have to lean into this and really make some shifts. And to make meaningful change, we have to be open to the fact that we're going to try new things and we're going to stumble and we're going to feel like maybe we didn't do it right. But then all of a sudden, we're going to get clarity on things too. And that really takes time and it's an effort and you have to really be thoughtful about how you do it. So I love that, you know, you're providing those weekly check-ins because those are so important, I think, for parents too. So with that, I think one of the things that comes up often, and I've done sort of work around this and challenges with parents, kind of keeping it in the context of like, let's not be hard on ourselves. Let's figure out how we can just fix it. But like big reactions, right? Yelling, I yelled at my child, or the only way my child will listen is if I yell or threaten a punishment. These are sort of the common things that are asked of me or told to me, you know, by parents. Where would you ask them to start? What's the first thing we would tell a parent who feels or believes really that that is the only way their child will cooperate?
I go back to the beginning of the day.
Yeah.
I really want parents to kind of become used to checking in with themselves, right? So a brand new day isn't a clean page in terms of how regulated you feel and how calm your nervous system feels, right? So I always talk about this because I picture this sort of green zone, yellow zone, red zone. Green zone is regulated, meaning that our nervous system is not in fight or flight. Our nervous system is calm. Our nervous system is focused, meaning that we can activate our frontal lobe behind our forehead better. But waking up, again, doesn't mean that you're starting in the green zone because perhaps there's a deadline at work today. Perhaps you have a doctor's appointment and you're worried about results of something. Perhaps you had an argument with your partner the day before, or your mother or your mother-in-law or father-in-law, whatever it is, right? And that's still lingering. And so you're still uneasy. You're still focused or hooked on something in your mind. That is going to lead you to perhaps wake up in the yellow zone, meaning that you might react more easily to something that your child says. You might react more easily. It's something that your partner says. And so if we can be more mindful of that, we can say, ooh, okay, it's not about like saying, well, I'm in the yellow zone and so I can change that right away and everything's magically perfect. No, it's truly like every single week when we start our calls or group calls, we always check in with ourselves. And what I say to parents is, you're at least acknowledging that you're there. Just that in itself allows you to say, okay, I'm starting my day in the yellow zone. Or maybe you're saying, I'm starting the red zone and I don't know. People are going to be walking around eggshells with me today. I'm just not right. Something is off with me today. I'm just so worried about something today, a deadline I know I'm not going to meet, or I have to present something at work and it's not the quality that I want it to be. Can we at least acknowledge that? And then as your day goes, at least if something happens with your child, pause, force yourself to pause. You can come up with some sort of phrase for yourself. You could just say the word pause in your mind before you say anything to your child. And when you say pause, check in with yourself. Where am I? Green, yellow, or red? okay, I'm red. I just want to lose my absolute mind right now on my child. Like, this is so annoying or so frustrating. I've told them 10 times to clean up the living room. Okay, I'm going to connect with them. I'm going to do anything I can right now to connect because that's going to regulate my system. It makes me feel safe when I look at them in the eyes. I'm going to come down to their level and say, listen, I've told you many times right now, and part of me wants to scream so much because I'm just so frustrated with what you just did. You're ignoring me, and that makes me want to scream. But I'm taking a deep breath. I'm going to ask you one more time. And there will be a consequence, right? Like, this is the misconception, I think, in terms of parenting, where somehow this sort of pendulum of balancing warmth and sensitivity, which is new to our generation of parenting, our parents did not know or care. It wasn't there. It wasn't the knowledge that they were given, which is fine. But now this came into the picture. And I think that many parents feel like it has to be a lot of what I do as a parent. I want to push harder on this warmth and sensitivity. And they don't realize exactly what it means. And so the misconception is it means keeping my child happy, making sure that they don't get frustrated, you know, that kind of stuff. But that is not it. So we can talk about that in a second. But what we want to balance that with is boundaries and limits. That is authoritative parenting, which in science we know is the kind of parenting that leads to your child learning how to cope with emotions, feeling connected and attached to you, and so on. But if we just stop our child from feeling unhappy, we keep them happy all the time, they're never upset, or like if we see they're going to get upset, we give in. We're not showing boundaries. We're not teaching emotion regulation skills. We're not giving them opportunities to be disappointed, frustrated, upset, so that they learn how to cope with that, or we can model it for them. And so we're left with a generation of kids who are truly struggling with regulating their emotions and feel that they should not be disappointed.
Yeah.
Right? Not all kids, but I'm seeing a lot of it because I work with schools here in the district and our neighborhood, not our neighborhood, but the Montreal area. I'm in Canada. And it's what we're seeing. And so going back to your question, I know that was very long, but we have to understand all of that first, because now we're placing yourself back in front of that child. The example was that they weren't listening or they're misbehaving in that moment. Well, all of that contributed to that one moment when you lost your mind and yelled, right? All of that is leading to that child feeling that the environment is more hostile rather than calm and regulated, and them being dysregulated, them being in that fight or flight system or mode rather than being regulated and having the coping tools to do that. And so, again, that's why it's not a quick fix. And that's why I love that you do the 12-week thing. The Reflective Parent Club is 12 weeks as well.
Yeah.
Because it's similar to you telling me, I want to start working out and I want like strong biceps. Okay, you're going to do your curls, your bicep curls for a couple weeks and say like, hello, I've been doing this for 10 weeks, not 10 weeks, maybe 8 weeks. And I feel a bit of a difference, but like, really? Like, I've been working every, you know, other day. And I'll say, but it's coming. And then it's like, you notice like from 1 week to the next, by that 12 week mark, it's like people are noticing, hey, nice biceps.
Yeah.
But it took the time, right? And so I think we have to remind ourselves that it works the same way with parenting and changing behaviors and supporting our child's behavior. It won't change overnight. That's a long answer again
no,
for your question.
No, it's perfect. It's perfect. And it's so accurate because you're painting a really clear picture of what I tell so many families as well, which is it starts with us. And I don't mean that in like a blaming way, because I think sometimes parents will hear that and go like, well, then my kid's out of control. So that means it's me. And, you know, it's not to be finger pointing. It's really just to empower you to know, like, doesn't that make you feel good that you can also make certain shifts and that your child will likely respond differently when you make those internal shifts? And as a result, you'll start to see some of those same, you know, results in them, or the ability to tolerate more frustration or cope with different emotions.
Exactly.
So I think it's an important thing to note. I know one of the processes that I teach, or the practices that I teach, is called PAR. And I created this honestly for myself years ago when my kids were in those like tweenish years where they were just starting to have some more independence. And I was in that phase of parenting where I was struggling to know like how much is mine to manage and how much am I pulling back and how much am I controlling and how much am I kind of letting the failures happen and things of that sort.
Right.
And so it just stands for pause, acknowledge, respond, reflect, because what was happening for me was that I was having big reactions. Mm. And so they would do things like exactly what you described. Like I would come home from, and I, at that time I was in a very aggressive sort of graduate school program and I was balancing a lot. And
that's hard.
I would come home and I would see a mess. And so the mess would then launch into, you know, I hate coming home to this and whatever, whatever.
Of course.
long story short is I ended up doing this process with myself because I didn't like how I was showing up. I didn't like how I was responding to fairly benign things. Like it didn't warrant that big of a reaction. So I was able to sort of pause, like you said, and then acknowledge like, okay, I'm feeling really activated right now. I'm feeling really triggered right now. And that's it. No judgment. I don't have to sit and tell myself not to or why or just acknowledging it. And then moving into a response, which 9 out of 10 times, if we can do those first two steps, you are going to respond in a way that is more attuned to what your child needs. And then having that time to reflect, right? And you know this, obviously, being in that reflective parenting club is like, now let's take stock of like, why did I think that, right? So I was talking about this to somebody else, but I'm the daughter of immigrant parents. And for us, we grew up really like constantly being stressed on the home looking a certain way and tidiness and value on achievement and things like that. And so, you know, when I would see my house as a mess, quote unquote, you know, what I perceived as a mess, it felt like then clearly I'm doing a bad job. Clearly my home is out of control. So I was internalizing these things. And then as a result, projecting that onto my kids and getting upset. And so the funny thing in all of it is when I stopped looking at that as a truth, I stopped believing that. And I just started to say, it's not true that if my house is messy, that I'm a bad mom. It's not true. That doesn't really make sense. And kind of really challenged that belief in some of the work I was doing. My kids started to clean up more easily. It was like the more I let go and just kind of thought, I'm not going to really like give this my energy right now. Like there were other things that were more pressing. It suddenly got better. So I think we forget that there is this kind of tug and pull that kids will do. So I love that you're explaining it in the way that you just explained it, because it starts with us. And I think when we know that and we can start a conversation or set a boundary, we can do it in a way that is more clear and we can feel more steady about whatever our child's response is to it.
So good.
So with that, you had sort of talked about this and I loved it and I want to elaborate on it because I think it is missed often. I almost feel like this pendulum has swung so much in the parenting space of like, only honoring emotions, but not really holding expectations around behavior.
Right.
So how do you guide parents with setting boundaries and really welcoming the idea that like we do need consequences? Like it just is how kids will learn without it feeling like a punitive punishment.
Right, exactly. And that's the word that's the difference, right? Like discipline is still there. We still need to discipline our child. They will receive consequences and that's okay. The child won't be happy about it, but we as their leader, you know, I like to look at it that way. I'm running a company too.
Yes.
It's interesting because as I was building a company, I was becoming a leader, right? A CEO. And so figuring out like, how do I manage a team as this is growing? And I started seeing so many similarities between how I would manage the team and my kids. And I was like, hold on a second. It's I'm the CEO of my home too, right? I'm the co-CEO with my husband. So to your question, the point is that the punishment now we've realized is not what's going to support that child. And I have had many conversations with moms, but mostly dads. Moms and dads are part of Curious Neuron and the Reflective Parent Club. And coming from a culture or a background where as a parent, my child should obey everything that I say. And if they don't, they will be punished until they obey so that there's the fear, right? Like that's authoritarian parenting. And what I try to tell parents who feel that that's the best way, because I just want my child to always, you know, again, it's kind of like the home, right? The home that you described. If I'm in public and my child acts out, that represents me as a parent. And so I'm embarrassed. And so you better not act out in public. But somewhere in there, there's a child who's developing, who's learning all these skills. And so what it would look like in that situation is you do come back home and the discipline is learning, right? Like kind of telling the child, in the situation, what you said, you should not say again. There might be a consequence if it was severe enough, right? Like, I don't know, grocery store, right? You ran and you tossed all the cereal boxes on the ground. We left immediately. We didn't buy anything. That was a consequence. But I'm letting you know, the next time I go to the store, I can't bring you. You're going to have to stay with the other parent because I can't bring you. We're going to stop that for like, you know, you won't come for the next 2-3 times or whatever it is. And meanwhile, I'm going to keep repeating to you that when we are at the grocery store, you cannot do that. Maybe you want to run around. We can run around when we get home, right? Like there's a whole process. It's not just about saying no to a child. It's truly about, especially with very young kids, what is the opposite of that? If I'm jumping on the couch, I have energy. And so I can't jump on the couch. I'm not going to let you do that if that's a rule in my home. But I'm seeing that you have a lot of energy. Can you let me know? Can you help the child tune in to their own needs and say like, I see I have a lot of energy. Do you want to go outside? You know, is it possible? Do you want me to create an obstacle course? I would do that with my kids. I would place things on the floor. They'd have to jump over it. And then I'd place all the dining room chairs lined. So it was like a little tunnel that they had to crawl under. Then they'd run around the kitchen island and go back again and do that course again. But I told them that's, you know, let me know when you feel like you have a lot of energy, but don't jump the couch. We have to somehow support the child. Discipline is teaching. And so we have to provide the child with ways to understand the right from wrong, have consequences, have firm boundaries too. And I think it was Busy Toddler. She had used this concept that I heard many years ago, but it really helped me as well, where it's one chance for success. Because I think as parents, maybe also mostly moms, from what I'm hearing from parents, we say, stop, stop, don't do that, don't do that, get down, stop. We've said it 10 times. And we reach our red zone and we're dysregulated because we've been ignored. Versus I think of my husband, it's like, I say it once. He says it once, right? He'll say once. And if you didn't obey, not obey, but you didn't follow the rule, then you lose the whatever object you were using.
Yeah.
You have to get off the couch if you jumped on it. And I look at him and I'm like, why do I put myself in this situation when I say it like 10 times? So Busy Toddler had said, the rule is one chance for success. You remind the child. So let's say you're having a dinner party, I don't know, in a new location, all the kids are there, and there's a door that's the exit door and it says, don't enter, right? Like, don't push through the door. And you have a young child and like that red sign that says like, don't pass is like an invitation to like, ooh, what's on the other side? And so for a young child, they're going to want to go. So if you see that, give them a chance to learn about it first, right? Like set them up for success. Say, hey, buddy, you know, you see that door? There's a red sign on it. It means we can't go through. Come in my arms. There's a little window. I can let you look on the other side. There's really nothing. It's a staircase, but I can't let you go there. If you do it once, the next time you do it, that's your one chance for success for me to remind you again. But after that one reminder, my friend, you're going to be coming back and sitting at the table and won't have the freedom of running around with the other kids, right? Like, how can we set our child up for success? Because I find that often we come into these situations, it's overwhelming for our child, it's overwhelming for us, but we don't kind of scan the environment with them and say, see there, I really don't want you to go. Let's go look at it together. Kids are naturally curious. And so how can I at least show it to them and say, if you press this door, the alarm's going to go on, right? Mm-hmm. Like I don't, but I can let you look through the window or whatever it is. I really, really need you to follow this rule, okay? Like we're in an environment and, you know, a lot of people, lots of kids have fun. But if you do go through that, then I'll have to ask you to sit down, right? Like we have to set them up.
Yeah.
So that's what I would say, right? Like there's a before, a during, and an after. The before is setting them up for success. During is staying firm on your boundary. I told you that if you did it again, you would be sitting beside me. And so here you are sitting beside me. Support the emotions. I know it's not fun. I see all your cousins running around and I told you, I gave you a chance. And so after 10 minutes, you'll be able to go. But for now, you need to sit beside me. That's the warmth and sensitivity. Not me saying, oh, I know it's not fun. It's a holiday and all your cousins are running around and you know what? Just go, but don't do it again. Like, no, you didn't stay firm with your boundary. Stay firm with it. Mm-hmm. Make it age appropriate too, right? Mm-hmm. 30 minutes for a 5-year-old is 30 hours.
Yes.
Right?
It's an eternity.
So 10 minutes or whatever is appropriate for your child, and then reminding them like you are here because of that. And so you need to follow instructions. I follow instructions too and rules. I can't go through that door. Did you notice, mommy or daddy? We're not going through that door. And then after, I think what we miss in terms of education is revisiting. Mm. I think that we often miss that opportunity. Many of the parents inside the Reflective Parent Club, they'll say like, oh, this happened on the weekend and we meet every Tuesday. And I'll say, like, have you revisited it? And they're like, oh, no, I forgot. Like, it happened. I was so frustrated. I yelled. And so now it's Tuesday. I'm like, nope, tomorrow you need to come back to it and say, like, all right, what happened? Like, how do I help you the next time again? How do I set you up for success? Because I noticed that you kept going towards the door and you kept pushing it. And then I noticed somebody come to you and say, like, hey, you can't do that. Ooh, you were really struggling with it. You know, like, again, impulsivity is something they're working on. All of these cognitive skills, that child wants to go see something, right? Or whatever it is, past that boundary. But as a parent, we are going to try to support them and meet them where they are. So that's before, during, and after.
Yeah, I love that too. And I think, you know, in terms of consequences, and like you're saying, setting that boundary and not kind of going, okay, I know we're in public and there are all these kids running around and I know that they probably don't want to sit and then they're going to cry. And so I'll just whatever, they can just go run around and I'll deal with it later. Like, every time we do that and we don't use what I call follow through language, like we just wind up, what ends up happening is like, I'll pull from like the four agreements, right? Like be impeccable with your word is one of them in the book, right? And it's so true. It's like when we say things, we have to mean it. And the more we do that, our kids just cooperate better and better because they trust and know, you know, that that's going to happen. I always tell parents, if you're in that, I love what you were describing about like the one chance for success, and we get in the habit of repeat, repeat, repeat. And then, like you said, the red zone. I love that you have that visual there of that, of like, okay, now I'm in the red zone and now I'm going to tell you that I'm throwing all your toys in the garbage because you didn't clean up. Like, we go into some.
And I've been there, by the way.
I know, right? I think we all have.
Like, I've literally said that.
I know. I know one of the parents was like, are you in my house? And I was like, no, but it's because everybody has done it, you know, and I get it.
Yeah.
I love that. You know, you kind of described your husband's, you know, situation where he just gives one warning and then he moves into an action. And really, kids do make meaning from experiences, not only the words that we say. So if they have an experience of going against something we ask them to do, and that experience then led to us following through on a consequence or doing something with love, being kind, being regulated ourselves, our child just starts to learn that that experience showed me that when they actually tell me that in the before part of what you described, the before, during, and after, oh, that really will happen. So I'm going to think twice about it next time we go to this place and they say to me, don't do this. We can offer all these other things, which I love, right? Kind of fostering that curiosity. I get it. You totally want to see what's behind the door. And I understand that, and not making them feel bad about that. You know, I was talking to Joe Newman recently, and he wrote a book called Raising Lions, and I love it. It's a really great sort of deep dive in how to work with kids who are struggling or might have more challenging behaviors and things of that nature. And he says, you know, it's really hard, but when a parent learns how to set a boundary without judgment is really when we start to see some good gains, right? Because it's like, usually we set the boundary and we'll say, if you just listened,
right,
which is really frustrating me right now. And so there's a lot, it's like loaded. We can't just set the boundary and just stay. Like, we have to almost make sure they know that they were wrong. And so I really still think that speaks to your work, which is, if you're regulated and calm, you won't go to the place of judgment either. You know, you'll be able to be steady.
And I think it's easy not to go to that place of judgment if we see it as a skill or tool I need to teach my child.
Yes.
Screen time's over, TV time, whatever it is, right? That's a big one for parents. And so parents will tell me, I say, it's enough, 5 minutes pass, I give them a warning, and then they still, I'm calm and I'm regulated, and then they still have a meltdown or a tantrum, and then I become dysregulated, and then I lose my mind and start yelling, and then they're yelling and I'm yelling. And so we're also escalating the situation, which is what I try to help parents with. Like, is my behavior towards my child or my reaction escalating or de-escalating the situation? And so in that moment, we kind of see like, oh, it's getting worse and worse and worse. But what we have to kind of remember is that child having a tantrum because we ended something is an emotion. It's disappointment. And so if I'm going to discipline or punish the tantrum in a way that I'm not educating, I'm not supporting, I'm not teaching skills or tools, it means the next time that my child's disappointed, they will react the same way because that's the pattern that they've built and they don't know anything other than that. And so if we can see it as, oh, wow, every time I say no to my child for a second dessert, or every time I say it's time to leave the park, time to leave grandma and grandpa's house, time to turn off the TV or your tablet, they have tantrums or they have big emotions that they can't control or cope with, they're disappointed because I said no to them. So what I don't hear the word disappointment when I get an email from parents and they say, every time I tell my child to turn the TV off, they have a tantrum. I disciplined the tantrum, nothing changed. Well, because they didn't learn how to cope with disappointment.
Yeah.
So start by modeling it yourself, right? It's like, maybe you're in traffic and you're going to be late for something and you're like, oh, I'm so disappointed. Oh my gosh, like I really don't want to miss this movie. But now we're going to miss the first 10 minutes of the movie. Like, you know, whatever, talking out loud, like I can't believe this. I'm just going to take a deep breath. Nothing I can change right now. You could even talk about what I have control over, what I don't have control over, what can I influence, which is something we often forget in positive psychology. There are the three parts: control, can't control, and influence. And so, you know, even for myself, I don't like being late, and I was late for a workshop. Like, this is the first time in like 5 years, but there was heavy traffic in the downtown area. And so part of me started panicking. I could feel my breathing getting heavy. I can feel myself like becoming anxious because it's a situation that puts me into that sort of mode. I'm dysregulated. And so I was like, okay, what can I control? I can call them. So, you know, I can make the phone call and let them know. But then after that, I can't control anything else. Like, I'm going to be late, but they're going to know about it. And in the end, it wasn't the end of the world. It's the story we tell ourselves in our minds. And so I really just want to share this because I think that as parents, we forget we're not just stopping the tantrum. We're teaching a skill and a tool. And that's usually by how we're going to model the same behavior or way to cope with that emotion.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's so spot on. And I think when you start to create more awareness around your emotions and your stress levels and the things that can get you to sort of feel more debated or more elevated in terms of like your stress levels. I think even beyond parenting, it's really helpful in so many other contexts of life, right? It doesn't just sort of pertain to parenting. It's really any relationship or any circumstance where you're feeling, you know, stress. Like you said, you're describing yourself and you see you're going to be late. And now you can almost have this meta experience where you're like, my heart is racing. I'm feeling sweaty. My breathing is getting more shallow. Like there is an awareness rather than completely succumbing to that stressed state.
Exactly.
And then derailing and spiraling from there, which is really fair, for, you know, in a lot of instances. But it's like that small pause and that ability to just be able to create some awareness around sort of your own physical state even and start to see it,
mm-hmm.
even that starts to bring a calming response, right? Starts to go, okay, but I am safe. There are things I can do. Let me see what I can manage. And, you know, yes, I can make this phone call. And so I love that so much. So I wanted to ask you, because with that, and you sort of mentioned this idea of like as a parent is becoming dysregulated, so is the child, or vice versa, right? The child has a big tantrum and now the parent is like at a 10 because they're matching sort of, I call it energy matching. It's
right.
Like this idea that when our child exhibits a certain degree of escalation, we do too. And you call it emotional contagion, which is much more beautiful than I think what I'm saying. So
it's the same though.
can you unpack that and really explain that to us? Because I think it's a huge, huge thing that really, when you start to get a grasp of how to manage yourself in those situations, it does just change the trajectory of where that behavior is going to go.
Yeah. And I think the best way to kind of grasp that concept, it's exactly what you described, right? Our emotions are kind of transferred to the people in our environment. Just think of your home, you're maybe preparing dinner and your partner, you know, husband or wife comes home and they're not in a good mood. It takes a split second for you to change into their mood. It doesn't take much time. They say one comment and your happy mood has completely changed. And we forget that. We forget that the same happens with our children. There's another term also for stress. I forget it now. It's another research-based one, but it's the same thing for stress. It floods into our child. There are studies that look at when a parent is really stressed in the home, even if they're not like creating stressful situations for the child, the stress itself is transferred and they see that these kids struggle more with social relationships at school because they're more anxious, more stressed and worried when there's a lot of stress in the home. So whether it's emotions or stress, it's our ability to cope with that. And so just being able to notice, okay, I came home from a really bad day, or, you know, children have so much to teach us. I just had this glimpse of a moment I had with my middle child, my son, but he was around 5 at that time. And I was trying to teach him because he's the kind of child who would have like a bad moment, and that bad moment would be a bad day.
Mm.
So for example, his younger brother would take away his truck or his toy or destroy his tower that he built with his Legos or building blocks. And at the end of the day, I always ask my kids, what was the best part of your day? And as they brush their teeth and they get ready. And I remember I was helping him take his bath and I said, so what was the best part of your day? And he's like, there wasn't any good part. It was a bad day. And I'm like, oh, what happened? I mean, I was with them. So I'm like, what happened? He's like, well, my baby brother took my toy again. He broke it, or he, you know, took it apart or whatever it was. And I was like, okay. So did that last the entire day? And he was like, no. And I was like, when did that happen? He's like, this morning. I'm like, okay, it's like 6:30 now. What else happened today? And he's like, I don't know, nothing. And I was like, okay. What do we have for lunch? And he's like, oh, I forget what it was, right? We had this. I'm like, do you like eating that? He's like, oh yeah, it's one of my favorite foods. I was like, interesting. I'm like, did we read together? He's like, yeah. And I like the book. I'm like, interesting. I noticed you played with daddy too this afternoon. He's like, or this evening. And he's like, yeah, I had fun. And I was like, I'm like, that was a moment that you had. And I said, there will never be a day where you don't have a bad moment. Sometimes, maybe, but most of the time, there will be bad moments. So that happened the first time. And then I was trying to be more aware of him saying that for his day at the end of his, like, it was a phase that he was going through and everything. Every day was a bad day. And it was only a week into it that I realized that at the end of my day, my husband and I would sit down and he'd say, how's your day? I was like, oh, it's the worst. It was so hard. The three kids, I have a 3-year-old, a 5-year-old, and a 7-year-old. And there's always a problem. Who's arguing? Who's doing? And then as I said it out loud, I was like, oh, I'm doing what I'm telling my son not to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I mean, I journaled about it. I talked about it on the podcast. I was like, wait a second. I'm taking bad moments with my kids and I'm not seeing all the good moments. And so I started gratitude journaling at that point. And then everything changed for me. But I think that as parents, we really forget that we will have bad moments throughout our day, but we forget the moments of joy. Not only do we forget to notice them, we forget to sit in that moment of joy. And that regulates our nervous system so much. So yes, I understand. Maybe driving the kids to daycare or school, it's a hectic time. And so maybe that's the bad moment. But then when you come to work, how do you create good moments, right? Like, is there somebody that you could release and just talk to? Maybe there's really good coffee at work, or maybe, you know, you can walk around a building before you go in, or you could park further and walk from your car to the building. How do you create a moment of pause? How do you create a moment of joy, a moment that you could sit in and say, okay, whew, that was really tough this morning. My toddler refused to go to daycare today, and my other one didn't want to go to school. And so that moment is gone. It's done. It's over. Taking a deep breath, and I'm transitioning into work right now. Home life, mom life, dad life is done. I'm transitioning now. And I'm going to try to create good moments. Maybe there'll be another bad moment at work, right? But I don't want us to kind of let those moments linger without realizing that there are some good moments kind of sprinkled into the day as well.
Yeah.
And that makes a difference for us.
I love that. And I think it's, I always say, it doesn't matter like if my background's in early childhood development or, you know, I'm a pediatric speech and language pathologist or was. And so I've worked with so many kids, and I always said the greatest lessons I learned were from the kids that I worked with and from my own kids too. But
right.
It's because, you know, I always say the best thing that can happen to a new therapist or a young therapist is getting a child that everything you learned in graduate school just doesn't apply in this moment. And you have to figure out how to like tune in, see what they need, you know, manage yourself and really like discover how you can manage the situation so that you can bring the best out of that child. And it's a tall order, but it's so worth it. And when you kind of look at it through that lens of like, I will do this, I will figure this out, and I will make sure I get the best out of this child and that they trust me and that they will work with me. And instead of looking at it as like this daunting, like, oh, every day is, you know, tantrums and it's this and it's that, it's like, how can we shift that perspective? Same thing, like you're saying, you're getting to work now. How do we reset? How do we transition? How do we say, okay, that happened, overwhelmed me for sure. I'm feeling exhausted already, but you know what? Here's what I have to look forward to. Here's what's ahead. Here's what I can experience. Here's what I can give myself permission to do. So I think all of those are really great. When I work with families sometimes when they first start, and you probably see this too, and that like on that week one of 12, you know, I'll say, just describe your child to me. And they immediately sort of start with everything that seems to not be working, which is understandable.
Right.
And then I'll say, I want to know like the good stuff. Like, tell me like, what are they funny? And like almost always a child who demonstrates challenging behaviors is almost always very humorous and funny too. Are they clever? Are they, right? Like, I know because I've worked with so many kids who are like this, and they're really personable and they're charming and they're, right? They have all these great qualities to them too. And sometimes I'll say to the parent, I want you for just the next week to just notice a really cool thing that they do every day, right? And it's amazing. I'll even have parents in tears by day five who are like, we've been missing this. Every day he helps his brother put his shoes on before we leave. Every day he walks up to a friend at school and makes sure that they get in line because that kid doesn't have a lot of friends. Or every day they, and so I think when we're so stuck in like the areas where we think we're not doing enough, it's like we could just be missing all the other things. So to your son's point of like, well, today was terrible because, you know, my toy was broken. I love how you did that. And the other thing I loved about the way you described your interaction with him is at no given point were you trying to convince him.
Right.
There was just this guided conversation. I always say if we can get to the point where you observe and witness instead of fix and solve,
yes,
it will be that path that your child really needs, right? So that they can start to develop those same sort of internal systems to work through certain challenges. And so you were really just there holding space for him and guiding that process. And if he decided at the end that it still was a bad day, okay, like, but you seeded for him different ways of being able to look at the day and being able to, you know, kind of decide, is it a bad day or is it a good day? So I loved that. Kudos to you for probably intuitively knowing, like, there's a way that I can guide this process. Because I think most parents, and this comes up a lot, I had a video on TikTok that has over 7 million views. And all I say in it is the most simplest advice. But all I'm saying is if your child is sort of leaning a little negative one day and just saying like, ugh, I hate that restaurant. And let's say, you know, they don't hate it, but they're just saying that. Most parents' knee-jerk reaction is to say, no, you don't. We ate there last week and you do like we get very righteous in that moment. We sort of feel like we have to defend the decision. And I just said instead, just go like, oh, gosh, I get it. Sometimes it feels like we don't want to go to a certain place, but that's where we're going tonight for dinner. So, but I get it. And just let it kind of be. Oh, my gosh. I mean, it. I didn't think I shared anything earth-shattering, but, you know, it's amazing.
But it's a good reminder.
Yes, right? The same thing like your son saying, I had a bad day. And you're like, huh, okay, well, what did we have for lunch? And what about this? And it's like, oh my gosh, yeah, you're right. You're stacking all these other experiences and moments for him.
And the situation that you just described, I think if I think about how it would play out, you are going against what your child is feeling in that moment. And then they're going to get upset. You're going to escalate the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to say like, oh, this night already started off bad. You know, like, I don't think we catch ourselves in moments when we escalate a situation. I've been there. We're all going to do it at some point. We're going to escalate a situation because the self-awareness won't be there in that moment. Again, we could come home from a really bad day of work and then something happens with our kid and they're like, I don't want to eat dinner tonight. And you're like, come on, like, you know, you like this food. Just eat. I need you to eat so that we can start bedtime. And then they're like, well, then I'm not going to eat anything. But your reaction is escalating the situation. And so if we can catch ourselves in that moment and be like, oh, and I've done this. I've escalated situations with my kids where I catch myself and I'm like, oh, okay, hold on. I just literally saw us going up and higher and higher. I'm like, hold on. Okay, hold on. I just need to pause. I shouldn't have said what I just said to you. However, I'm still really frustrated because you guys didn't, I'm going to use picking up because this is what we argue about the most. You guys left your Legos on the floor and now I stepped on one and I'm absolutely livid.
We all know that pain.
And every part of me wants to throw your Legos away, but I'm not going to do that. I know I just said that. I'm sorry. I was really, really frustrated. However, it doesn't change the fact that this living room is an absolute disaster and I can't walk to my couch to sit down for 5 minutes. Can we understand together as a family that that has to change right now? And then the kids are like, okay, because I regulated myself first, right? Like, I didn't change anything. I didn't threaten them. The Legos are still there, but I caught myself in a moment of escalation and I stepped back. I regulated myself, realizing that it wasn't going to change anything. I don't need to threaten them. And they do it every single time when that happens. And I catch myself and I see one of my kids like escalating. I'm like, wait a second, what did I say? Oh, yeah. My language was really direct with them. Hold on, Cindy, step back a little bit, de-escalate the situation. And so to me, that really makes a huge difference in how we approach everything and how the situation ends up, you know, like the end of it.
Yeah.
Like the situation you described.
Totally. No, I agree with you. It almost makes me think a little bit too about even the value of repair, but also like the notion that when your kids, I think, see you sort of going from I'm escalating to like, oh, I'm going to model, actually. I'm sharing my internal dialogue with you. I'm talking to you about how I'm like walking my way back down that ladder. I'm getting my feet back on the ground. I'm really, okay, now I'm going to reset. Now I'm going to approach this in a totally different way. I think kids get so much out of that because one, they see there is a way to sort of turn that ship around when we start to feel that way. And two, I think there is such a vulnerability in being able to say like, ooh, I was not about to handle that right. Or maybe I didn't handle that right. And I'm actually going to step back for a second and really make sure that I'm getting calm. I'm getting back into my body. Now I want to connect with you. I think there is an inherent connection that kids feel in that moment. And there's just more trust that's built. And that's why I think we actually see more cooperation because in that moment, they're probably like, oh man, we felt, you know, I always say kids sense and feel more than they see and hear. I've worked with so many kids who are nonverbal communicators. And really, you just can tell they can sense their energetic little beings. They know they can, you know, and so you have to really look at that and recognize that they're sensing and feeling things all the time. So they sense and felt like my mom really opened up to me right now. And she really shared like how she felt. And gosh, I have responsibility in this relationship, which is like, I'm going to do my part and make sure she's taken care of too, which I think is what we want to teach within a family dynamic, that sort of meeting each other's needs. So I think that's so, so beautiful. Oh my gosh, Cindy, I could talk to you forever. This could be a 5-hour podcast.
Same.
But I want to be mindful of your time. So where can people find you and where can they find information on the Reflective Parenting Club? Because I think it's such an important service and I love that you're the one guiding parents through this.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah, so the podcast is called Reflective Parenting by Curious Neuron. I wanted to make sure that the title didn't like lose Curious Neuron, but it's Reflective Parenting. It's available anywhere. And there's CuriousNeuron.com. There are articles that we have written by graduate students, by researchers. Our graduate students that are writers for us reach out to researchers and try to have a Q&A at the end of some articles. We really want parents to have actionable, you know, tips. Like, a lot of the stuff we cover focuses on, again, emotion regulation, emotional intelligence, parenting practices, and your child's emotional development. So there's that on CuriousNeuron.com. Instagram is Curious_Neuron. Then there's Facebook, Curious Neuron. So anywhere they can find us for free and learn. And CuriousNeuron.com, they can click on join the club or join the membership. anywhere on the website. It's there quite a few places. And I just want to make sure that if parents say, hey, you know what, I relate to all of this, but I've been listening to all this content and reading all these books for years now and haven't seen a change in my home. I'm following positive parenting. I know that it's important for my child, but I don't have the skills to cope, you know, with my own emotions. Then, you know, that's the parent I support. The one that says, I really need to work on these skills because I'm just fed up of always reacting. I want to respond.
I love that so much. And I think to anybody listening, because I, like I said, I've been a fan for a long time and I love your website and I love that it actually distills research in a really applicable way. And I think for most parents, and I think you even posted something like this on Instagram, that it's like the research can almost start to feel like, oh, like, what do I do? I don't even know. I'm trying this approach. I'm trying that approach. I feel like I'm always just doing it wrong. And, you know, there is this like ping ponging of like trying to figure out what the research is really saying and how to really, and we know, right? A lot of these research articles, sometimes it takes a minute to really figure out where are we going with it and what is the takeaway for a parent who is just trying to get through their everyday life, you know? So I love that on the website that you guys do that. I think it's a really great way to sort of make it tangible and accessible. So I highly recommend everybody goes to all of the places that you just suggested. I'm going to include all of those in the show notes. So if anybody's like, you know, like writing this down very quickly, just don't worry, you can find it in the show notes. And I know that so many people really are benefiting from your work. So
thank you.
From one parent to another, I thank you so much for being here.
That means a lot to me. Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed our conversation. I hope we have another one. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining me today. If you liked what you heard, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast wherever it is that you're listening right now. And what really makes my day is if you share or recommend the podcast to a friend. It is the greatest compliment. If you have not already, head on over to theparentingreframe.com where you can subscribe to get my weekly newsletter, Parenting Skimmed, 10 sentences delivered to your inbox every Thursday to help you parent and live a better life. It's for the parent who constantly told me, I just don't have time to read. Make sure to come and say hi to me on Instagram at The Parenting Reframe. My DMs are always open and I love hearing from you. Until next time, this is Albiona.